So our next item is going to be water quality control planning, and I'll let you introduce the item, Mr. Robertson.
Thank you, Chair Wolf. Item 13 represents the City of Atascadero's Local Agency Management Program, or LAMP, for board approval. Staff has reviewed the LAMP for consistency with the State Water Board's policy that establishes siting, design, operation, and maintenance criteria for on-site wastewater treatment systems, commonly referred to as OTS, the OTS policy. Presenting this item is Cecile DiMartini. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chairman Wolf and board members. I'm Cecile DiMartini with the Water Resources Control Board. And I've been working with my colleague Jennifer App and the staff at the City of Atascadero to complete the process of them creating their local agency management program. A local agency management program provides the roadmap to proper design, siting, and permitting of on-site wastewater treatment systems, commonly referred to as septic systems. And the program presented today is to manage on-site wastewater treatment systems within the City of Atascadero. I've said some terms already, just to clarify, they are LAMP, Local Agency Management Program, on-site wastewater treatment systems, and again, more common term is a septic system. And but we do tend to use the term OTS, on-site, which is short for on-site wastewater treatment system, because some systems are more advanced than your traditional septic system. Local agency, we typically refer to the city or the county, the agency that's preparing the plan. And then waste discharge requirements, we typically use the acronym WDRs or permits. And so, you know, as I talk about WDRs, that's essentially we're just talking about permits. So the legal context for the OTS, or the LAMP, is the California Water Code prohibits discharge of wastewater from OTS systems unless you have a WDR or a waiver of WDRs. OTS policy came into effect in 2013. It provides a waiver of WDRs if septic systems meet the requirements in the OTS policy. Prior to the OTS policy, the Water Board was issuing permits for larger systems, and the local agencies were issuing permits for the smaller systems. The OTS policy was phased in over time and replaces old requirements in the basin plan and local agency agreements. Some requirements started right away, yet local agencies were able to continue permitting small systems until May 13, 2018. The idea was to give local agencies time to develop a local program that met the OTS policy conditions. These LAMPs, or local programs, must be approved at the Regional Water Board level. The purpose of the OTS policy is to allow local agencies that continued permitting and oversight of OTS while still protecting water quality and public health. A local agency shall not implement a program different than the minimum standards contained in the OTS policy until approval of the proposed LAMP is granted by the Regional Water Board. The option for a LAMP is presented in order for agencies to address their local unique conditions. Water boards review the proposed LAMPs to ensure it provides a plan that is protective of water resources. Water Board staff and the City of Atascadero worked through extensive comments and responses over the past year to produce a document that is presented today. This image here is to give the board members some context of how many septic systems actually currently exist within the City of Atascadero's jurisdiction. It shows that well over 50% of the households in Atascadero are on a septic system, and why a LAMP is important to ensure the protection of water quality. And just for reference, most of the parcels that you see here that have OTS systems are on 2 acres or more in size.
So how many? You said 50%, but can you quantify the number of on-site water treatment systems?
I don't have that number off the top of my head, but I'm going to guess it's a little over 2,000. 6,000.
Okay.
Thank you.
So 6,000 out of 12,000 homes and businesses?
It's about 6,000 out of about 12,000 parcels.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about 6,000 out of 12,000 parcels, correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The OTS policy includes many requirements, and here are the three key components that I will go over in more detail in the next three slides. The three components I'll briefly discuss are protection of water resources, OTS density, and advanced groundwater and surface water protection plans. With regard to protection of water resources and water quality, the Tascadero LAMP complies with all OTS prohibitions, such as prohibitions to building of cesspools, discharge of RV holding tank waste, and poorly designed disposal areas. The Tascadero LAMP complies with all OTS setbacks to groundwater, surface water, structures, existing septic systems, and property lines. When setbacks cannot be met for a repair or replacement, the city of Atascadero they have the option to require additional treatment installed. The Atascadero LAMP provides tables and design formulas to ensure OTS are designed to meet the technical standards for siting and designing on-site wastewater treatment systems. The City of Atascadero Council has ensured their commitment to supporting the proposed LAMP. The City of Atascadero's OTS density standards are aligned with the OTS policy by following the OTS policy minimum parcel sizes based on 30-year average rainfall data for the immediate region. This is consistent with the OTS policy. The City of Tascadero's LAMP states that they are prepared to identify impaired groundwater basins and surface water bodies and work with the Water Board to find the source of degradation. Currently, there are no known impaired water bodies within the City of Tascadero. Although if a degraded basin or surface water body becomes evident, then the septic systems located near the degraded basin or surface water body may be subject to inspections, monitoring, and installation of supplemental treatment. The language in this section of the City of Atascadero's proposed LAMP is much the same as the language in the past two LAMPs approved by the board, that being the Monterey LAMP and the Santa Barbara LAMP. In conclusion, the Tascadero LAMP is consistent with the protective conditions as set forth in the OTS policy. And again, it is much the same language as the other two LAMPs that have been approved by the board. We recommend that the board adopt resolution number R3-2018-007 as presented. I'm happy to answer any comments or questions.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
So can you go back one slide?
Mm-hmm.
So are there, you said that there were no, we're not aware of, and Atascadero isn't aware of any impaired surface water bodies. Are we aware of, or are they aware of, any impaired groundwater basins at this point?
Well, at this point, we are aware that the local groundwater basin does not have any data showing that it's impacted.
Okay. So that sounds like a we don't know.
Well, you know, the City of Tascadero, only a portion of it overlies a groundwater basin,
uh-huh,
where they get their water supply. But the bulk of where you saw all the septic systems, there's no defined basin at this time.
Okay. And so you said that the language is similar to that in this area, similar to that in the previous two lamps we've adopted. So I presume that that means that essentially the onus is on us as the regional board to show impaired groundwater, at which point the onus switches to the city to come up with a plan that we approve. Is that a fair summation?
Yeah, I know that Jennifer is working on the ground, you know, how we're working towards determining an impacted or polluted groundwater basin. I think she can answer that question a little bit better.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation, Cecile. And I think maybe this is a larger question related to the density. Given that there is going to be a change in rainfall pattern, are we looking at updating any policy as to how we permit these moving forward? I don't think a you question. Maybe that's a larger question.
So the table presented in the OTS policy, table one, is, you know, it's based on rain. And so the city of Atascadero does have to look at the last 30 years of data, and that is how it's written in the OTS policy. And certainly, you know, if we keep looking at droughts, you know, that will change in time. But you know, it is in line with OTS policy. So every 30 years, that you know, you kind of just as that trend goes, and you know, every local agency has to modify their permitting requirements based on that standard.
Right, but is there a periodic update to the policy? I mean, we are looking at obviously different. There's going to be different rainfall patterns just in the next 5 years, and so I, you know, looking back at data, I'm not sure is going to be a good representation for any permitting moving forward. So I'm wondering what the accommodation for that is, what kind of course correction we have in place, if any.
Ms. Gray, this is Stephanie Yu. So the OTS policy is a waiver of waste discharge, so it needs to be renewed, or it expires every 5 years.
Okay, so we have an opportunity in 5 years to relook at that. But I would imagine it has to be consistent with language in the OTS policy. So does language in the OTS policy need to change in order for us to do that? Related to the rainfall pattern and the previous 30 years, is that something that's a state board issue that we need to look at?
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think realistically.
So that's what I'm getting at. So is that something that we are discussing at all, or?
I'll defer to the Jennifer. You participate in the roundtables for WDR. Is that anything that's come up at this point?
This is Jennifer Epp. So we haven't specifically talked about that issue with the update of the OTS policy. So currently, the data set will be updated. So the data sets are not static. So we don't, you know, just look at the data that was from past 30 years, 10 years from now. So that'll continue to be updated. I think you're touching upon whether or not even 30 years is appropriate.
Right.
And I can certainly keep that in mind when we come up for the next renewal, as Stephanie talked about in the OTS policy. We will have opportunity to provide comment when it comes up in another 4 years.
Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks, Stephanie.
In the context of how policy changes, it's at the roundtable level, programmatic roundtable, that this surfaces, this bubbles up, and we see like an inadequacy. If we know the rainfall patterns are going to change going forward, a regressional use, mm-hmm. isn't that helpful,
right? It's
right?
Not
that's the point you're raising.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as we look to modify the policy, you know, the roundtable can say to state board collectively, hey, we think we also need to add a variable into the equation that looks forward at the predictive rainfall patterns too.
Thank you.
I think that's something we can do.
I appreciate that.
Again, thank you, Cecile. And assuming that you've been working with the community of Atascadero on this, I note that in the staff report, it's the dates given for the city council in Atascadero to move forward on this was scheduled for the November 13th city council meeting. And I know we had this discussion about how the sequence of approvals, and if the city council approves it, and then we follow as the secondary approval, and there are any changes that we make. I'm not suggesting that or anticipating that today, but I'm just want to know where we are in our thinking on this sequence. Should we request any modifications to the order that they've already approved, then our process would be to go back to them and first of all, did they approve the LAMP at November 13th City Council meeting?
The City of Atascadero officials here, they presented it to the council, and it was preliminarily approved on the understanding that the Water Board has to give final approval of it. Its final approval will occur immediately after the board has approved this resolution.
Okay. And then just for my understanding, as these LAMPs move forward, we have the regulatory responsibility for management of septics, but we delegate or we have agreements with counties to manage those programs, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So for Atascadero, they have been under the management policies and ordinances and codes established by the County of San Luis Obispo. Is that correct?
I believe they have their own ordinances for their septic system design within the city.
I know they're here today, so maybe mm-hmm. they can confirm that. Talk about that. Because it's interesting to me, mm-hmm. you know, how the chairs get moved at the table, and how the metrics and performance reports shift. You know, how we track their history for mm-hmm. Maintaining and being in compliance with the LAMP now, but looking at what their history is in anticipating where they may need, where we may need to focus on their program, any weak links that may be part of the established system. As I note here that in the interim, Atascadero will implement the LAMP for approximately 12 months while concurrently amending the municipal code sections for consistency. Mm-hmm. So I see this little area of time where the LAMP supersedes everything, and yet their ordinance language and codes mm-hmm. are still in development. So I'm just curious mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. how where the assurances are logistically in their program. Mm-hmm. How are they, what kinds of data, what kinds of information are they gathering, and is it routine and regular and part of the existing program? And if it's not the county, which I expected it to be, that they have been working with the county. So since it's not the county, it would be really interesting to understand what data they collect now and how they manage their program currently, and then how this next 12-month period, how that transition will occur. Mm-hmm. So those are not questions I think you can answer, but I wanted to raise them. Jennifer, you have anything to add?
Mm-hmm. I can certainly touch on your question about the counties versus the city. So permitting authority for these OTS systems varies from county to county. So in some counties, they do the permitting for all of the cities, but that's not the case in a lot. So that's the reason why we use the term local agency, because it just depends on whoever has the permitting authority. Santa Barbara is an example where the county of Santa Barbara does not do the permitting for systems that are located in the city. And so right now, the county's LAMP doesn't apply within the city. And so that exists in various locations. And so for us, what we do is we just ask the question for each particular area, who has the permitting authority? And that is who we're working with on the LAMPs and with this program.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're like Santa Barbara County. We have some areas that are managed by or controlled by the county ordinances, and other cities that have chosen to establish their own. And there is assurance that those local city ordinances are meeting county ordinances that meet our what the regional board regulatory standards are. So there is consistency across these different levels.
There's consistency either with the, they're either going to fall under a LAMP or they're going to fall under their own LAMP or they're going to come to us. So, you know, Santa Cruz County is another example where some of the communities have given the authority for OTS permitting to the county, and so the county handles that. So we're just dealing with the county for those. And then another couple of jurisdictions the county doesn't oversee, and so they're dealing directly with us. So the city of Santa Barbara doesn't need to be consistent with the county's LAMP because they are not, it's not applicable to them at the moment. They're working on a potential agreement where they might fall under the county's LAMP, but until then, the city is on their own and we're working with them directly for OTS permitting. Mm-hmm. Does that help?
Yeah, it does. And I realize the in this transition, there's likely a review of codes and ordinances to see where there are inconsistencies, because over time, as these programs, you know, were separated out continued as part of a larger set of community areas, both incorporated and unincorporated, I'm guessing that those things hopefully will, you know, shed light on areas that have fallen out of consistency. They may have started out that way, but they may not be now. So this is our opportunity to look at these various different programs and different authorities. So it sounds like a lot of different entities, much more than I realized when we first looked at the LAMP program and how we were going to proceed with that. So this is very informative. So I'll look forward to any comments from the city folks from Atascadero. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Young.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions about the specifics to the groundwater table in that area. And Cecile, I don't know if you have the information, I'll ask you. Mm-hmm. If not, are they coming up? Are the folks from the city coming up?
They're available for questions, yeah. if
okay.
we would like.
So what I want to know, though, is what's the depth to groundwater across the city?
Well, if that's just it, and I should probably have a figure out. But essentially, there is only the basin, a groundwater basin, only exists along the Salinas River that is right on the eastern edge of the city of Atascadero's city limits, and depth to groundwater, I'm guessing they're pulling from 700 feet. But otherwise, beyond that, and I mean, we're probably not looking more than 100 feet of that groundwater basin entering their city boundaries. To the west of that, there is no known groundwater basin.
Do you have a map? Does anyone have a map that,
you know,
so I can visualize this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or go back to the city map and... Mm-hmm.
I think an answer, this is Matt Keeling, Assistant Executive Officer. The answer to that question is it depends where you are within the Atascadero city limits. So there are areas that are lower, kind of valleys and canyons, and then as you go west from 101, you start getting into the hills, mm-hmm. where you're not, and again, she's talking about there is no groundwater, formal groundwater basin. What they're discharging to is, you know, upland areas, fractured granite, you know, and soil of probably significant depth before you reach any groundwater, per se.
But I have a question, though, tying to that. A lot of these properties are not on city water, correct?
Actually, all of them are.
All of them?
100%?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No private wells?
There are some private wells on the west side, but the city claims that they're not very functional.
Because when you said 700 feet.
Over here, along the, where in the blue area is where the river goes through, and that's where most of their water supply wells are established. And, yeah, they're they're pretty deep.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay.
No, you're not, you're adding.
And so, and as you can tell, I circled the area where we understand a groundwater basin to exist.
That's the blue line?
Right, uh-huh.
Okay, okay. So, Matt, is there like no threat, true threat to groundwater? Is that essentially what's going on, that it's so deep?
Well, with respect to OTS discharges, there's always a potential threat to groundwater, which is why we have the policy and the associated criteria that have to be met with the design and construction and operation of these systems. And there is going to be a monitoring plan in place at some point in time that will document to the extent which that may be occurring. At this time, we don't think it's that significant, potentially with respect to the fact that the earlier question is that in the areas where you're seeing most of the OTS, there aren't private domestic wells, and they're, you know, reasonably far away from where the city's municipal water supply wells are. They're being primarily recharged by the Salinas River.
I also want to reiterate the average parcel size on the west side of town is pretty significant. I think, Cecile, you said roughly 2 acre average parcel size?
Yeah, most of them are over 2 acres.
So that speaks to the density and loading.
Right. And soil types?
Well, it's mostly bedrock, actually.
So it's going to be decomposed bedrock, you know. Mm-hmm. Those are old granitics, generally.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
On my continuing on my left.
Cecile, thank you very much. Good job, and I'm sure a lot of work goes into these reports. We only get the sort of the icing on the cake presented to us, so appreciate that. Just a little education for me. What's the logic behind minimum parcel size? What criteria go into determining what that should be?
Mm-hmm. Well, my understanding of it in overseeing the EIR that was written for the OTS policy, it has to do with giving time for the nitrates to assimilate into the upper beta zone. So by the time that it leaves a property's boundaries, it's not going to impact any potential water supply wells. Or eventually water resources.
So then the parcel needs to be big enough that the leachate can leach without causing offsite or groundwater
mm-hmm.
impacts.
Mm-hmm.
And so the larger the parcel, the more diffusion is possible before it leaves that parcel and affects somebody else or goes to groundwater.
Ideally, yes.
Okay. And then what's the relevancy of rainwater to the system, to septic systems?
It's essentially dilution.
So if you have a 100-year rain year, what impact might that have on septic systems compared to a drought year?
Well, you know, you'll certainly have a lot more flushing of your constituents through your beta zone.
Through your beta zone?
Through the beta, you know, a lot more flushing of, you know, all your nutrients that are in that beta zone, but it'll be, you know, diluted through the higher quantity of water that's going through that.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is what it is. It's going to rain. So, and that's just what happens when it rains. It definitely dilutes those proper constituents.
Okay, so I was a little concerned earlier about the 30-year discussion, mm-hmm. since projections are that we'll have 100-year rain years more frequently, almost every few years. And so is that part of the reason why we had the discussion earlier of reviewing the 30-year? But to me, I was thinking there was a problem if we had frequent 100-year rainfall distributions and we're looking at 30-year average rainfalls. But maybe I was misunderstanding.
So if I could jump in and clarify, mm-hmm. we're more likely to have 100-year storm events. They'll occur more frequently. In terms of 100-year seasonal rainfall, I don't think that's anticipated. I think if I recall what Dominic said yesterday, we will have more and longer droughts, and we will have, on average, slightly more rainfall. it seems counterintuitive, those two statements, but they actually can coexist. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah. So
we'll have some very, very wet years and a bunch more dry years.
So given that we'll have more frequent 100-year size storm events, right, what impact does that have on septic systems? Is that a concern? Is that a plus? And how does that relate to the 30-year average rainfall being used?
I don't know that those two necessarily relate. One is speaking more towards storm events, like 2 or 3 day storm events. Those will have a small, maybe not even significant effect on the dilution of the discharge from an OTS system. And then the 30-year sort of rolling average that this is this regressional analysis of what's the rainfall for the last 30 years on average. And if you're shifting towards a wetter year or wetter climate, that would actually benefit the system. You know, it have this consistent dilutive effect for the discharge from an OTS system.
Okay.
Can I clarify?
Yes, thank you.
Can I just add to that? Because, you know, Jane asked the question also, and Bruce just did, and I want to make sure we're getting the answer that I think we're trying to get from you guys. We had a huge discussion yesterday about adaptation because of climate change. Looking forward from what we know that climate change is going to do, should the OTS policy be changed at all looking forward? In other words, with some 100-year storm events, maybe longer periods of drought, does that scenario suggest that what we're proposing today is going to need to be changed? Is that what you guys?
Yes, that was my question.
Yeah.
Essentially, how are we accommodating for climate change and implementing it? And certainly, lots of these policies and directives were contemplated under different scenarios. So how are we reacting in real time to
implement that? And the 30 years, to me, the 30 years, that's the past. We're right. Just looking forward right. Now, and climate yeah. change is suggesting yeah. things that you told us about yesterday.
Yeah. And, let me add, I'm being patiently waiting, and I have some items I still want to cover, but on this particular topic, we need to remind ourselves also that when a on-site septic system is installed, what is the first thing you do? A percolation test. When do most percolation tests get done? Not in the middle of a winter, okay? If you get any common sense as a builder, you're not gonna do it dead middle of the winter. You're gonna wait a nice summer when everything is dry and you pass. So I think we need to add the practicality here that often the percolation tests are done in ideal conditions. And then I heard, oh, well, we have a lot of bedrock. Bedrock is not exactly your most suited soil type. So I'm not bringing solutions here, but I tend to agree with my colleagues that, you know, we kind of put a little pretty ribbon on this thing and say, well, no, it'll be all right. We'll have dilution. You know, some of us are on septic, and some of us are aware that you do have sometime leach line failures, okay? So I don't want to delve any further here, but I think my colleagues have good points here. So before I ask my other questions, also I'll let Mr. Robertson respond, and then I'll let Mr. Johnston also ask his question. Go ahead.
So I wanted to respond. I think Board Member Young asked a really good question. It was trying to get at the undertone of a bunch of other questions too. First of all, I want to tease out that we're talking about two things here. We're talking about Atascadero's LAMP, and we're taking issue with some of the policy drivers that are embedded in the OTS policy. And I think that's what that second thing is, what that question is getting at. Not the Atascadero LAMP. Let's set that aside just for a sec. there appears to be some inherent weaknesses in that regressional variable that is the 30-year back look average. Averages don't work as effectively when you have this kind of bimodal distribution or lots of dry periods and the occasional really, really wet period. Because you kind of have to design against the thing that's going to break your system. And in this case, it's probably the dry periods, in that we don't have as much rainfall dilutive benefit most years. No. You know, so that potentially has the... I see you shaking your head. Do you want to challenge that?
I will keep my poker face until my turn.
You broke down on your poker face. We should play poker. Is what we've learned here today.
Yeah, I know.
I can earn the money. So you're going to lose the dilutive benefit of that rainfall most of those drought years, you know, and that plays at the density issue. The density is driven in part by anticipating a certain amount of rainfall and the associated dilution. If you're not getting that most of your years, you have to consider that. You have to consider. The policy probably should consider the fact that it's not going to be this great linear rainfall pattern looking forward.
So are we planning for this? I mean, is there anything on our horizon where we are trying to accommodate climate change?
So like a policy rewrite opportunity.
That's what
I was trying to get at a little bit earlier. This is where the region...
John, I feel like I'm pulling teeth here with you guys, and you guys have all the information, and somehow we're not using the right language to...
No. What it is, policy gets built, and then State Board doesn't want to address policy for quite a few years because they've laid it to rest and because it's really an onerous lift for them. So I don't know the timing of the OTS policy rewrite. I anticipate they... well, readdress it, but I don't have a sense of timing of when. I think they're feeling pretty jazzed that it's finally kicking in now, fully kicking in. Lamps are coming before boards and getting adopted, and so I don't think they anticipate working on it. This is something we can look into at the roundtable level.
If the Central Coast gets information and data that suggests that some modification should take place. Can we do that through our own basin planning process? If the State Board is just too bogged down or not interested enough to
address it. One alternative, and I'm just pivoting right now. We're just having a conversation. One alternative is we are, I think, obligated to reevaluate how each LAMP is doing in a 5-year time frame, or is it less? This is a place where
it's annual.
This is a place where we can circle back and use our local authority versus waiting for the policy update to come through, which is a much slower process. I'm looking for the opportunity where we can fit this in a local construct.
So my preference would be to yes, because I think the overwhelming discussion we had yesterday is that we're probably thousands of dollars late and many days short of responding to the climate change circumstances that we find ourselves in. And my understanding was that we were taking a more proactive look at how we can implement under our regulatory authority the things that we have to respond to. Considering the regression and the analysis and understanding what we need to deal with moving forward, it would be beneficial, I think, for us to be actionable on these. And if that's on an annual basis, I think we ought to do that to the extent that we have the regulatory authority to do so without State Board having to update their policy. That's obviously a much longer lead time item. Anyway, I understand that we're talking about two different things in terms of Tascadero and the overall policy, but in order for us to be doing our jobs, at least from my perspective, I think we ought to take that into consideration. So thank you.
And Mr. Johnson, I think, had some supplemental.
I have a couple of comments. And as Mr. Robertson said, we've kind of veered into a little broader discussion. I don't want to make the Tascadero people in the back of the room too nervous here. We're not going to rewrite the odds policy on the fly here. Two things. First of all, I don't think it's as simple as what I'm hearing from staff, which is kind of more rain good, less rain bad. Having lived in a house with a septic system, with layers of clay, when septic systems typically fail is when you have big storms, and they lose the capacity to take all that water into the ground. The ground is soaked, and that's when stuff starts traveling overland. So it's not so, and what I'm hearing, which is news to me, but I credit it, is yeah, there's problems with septic system operation in real drought situations as well because of lack of flushing. So the increased variability would seem at either end to be potentially problematic. I have to say, though, that I kind of respectfully disagree with what I'm hearing, I think I'm hearing from a few of my colleagues on the board. I'm not eager to jump in on a local level to trying to rewrite the OTS policy. It seems like the factors we're talking about are factors that affect the whole state, not just the Central Coast. The variability of rainfall and the fact that average precipitation looks to increase, those are fundamentally, as I understand it, statewide factors. And I would much rather first explore, I like the idea, the concept that we should add an element that that is more predictive and not simply retrospective, that takes into account the increased variability of precipitation that we can expect year to year and the increased average precipitation we can expect. I think that makes sense, but I think it makes more sense to first suss out whether the State Board has any enthusiasm for dealing with it, because I think it's, if it's something that is impacting on a state level, given our limited resources, I don't want us to do a bunch of work and then have the state kind of come back and pave over the same work. That seems wasteful when our tasks are constantly increasing and our resources are not.
Okay. There are two discussions. One of them, I think, is more the the broader picture of the adequacy of the current statewide policy, which is what Mr. Johnson mentioned. I think what we're saying is, you know, certainly doing an immediate rewrite, but if we're going to walk the talk of yesterday, we can't just say, yeah, okay, that's fine, whatever. So I think it was appropriate to link yesterday's discussion and bringing back today. Otherwise, yesterday was just a nice, good feel presentation, and then we move on and we feel good about it and we go home. So I think I respect my colleague raising this issue. And it's perhaps more complex than addressing today a Tascadero-specific lamp. Now, you know, the reason I had difficulties holding my poker face is that I do not agree that the issue is, okay, summer, we have water quality issue, winter, you know, we have dilution. There's two distinct issues associated with on-site water treatment systems, and I keep calling them septic, and I know I'm not supposed to do that. One of them certainly is the water quality element, but a big portion of the infrastructure of leach system percolation, et cetera, is the adequacy of the system to be able to handle not only the flow of sewer from the property, but also the shallow soil profile to be able to handle the leaching. And septic systems are not dug 50 feet in the ground. You know, they're pretty shallow. It's a trench. So if you do have surface saturation of the soil, you inherently will have problems associated with the functionality of a septic system. So I'm not trying to, you know, give a 101 on construction, but it is a concern, and we need to recognize that. So on that map that we have there, since 50% of the properties of the parcels are connected to the sewer system, is there any
50% of the parcels are not connected to the sewer system?
No.
And the city can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they said 6,000 systems are on septic, and that is half of their parcels. There's a lot of undeveloped parcels as well. Did I get that correct?
Half the system is on septic, half is on sewer.
Yeah, that's right.
So half of the city parcels are on sewer?
Correct. That's
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Densely.
Okay.
Yeah, so where I'm getting at is what's the plan of the city of Atascadero to further increase sewer hookup? Because, you know, you probably have empty parcels, and, you know, one of the big long-term solutions that have been discussed in the past is maximizing sewer hookup, because you have a much better control over the environmental consequences of, you know, groundwater effects. So that's something that I will be asking the city manager, and maybe to help me understand, because it's, you know, it's one thing to have a land policy, but I think also it behooves us to see what's the plans here. There may be some properties nearby where laterals could be hooked up. The other point gets back a bit to what you know, Dr. Hunter said. When we adopted Santa Barbara, then came Monterey, and basically Monterey LAMP was, well, you know, this is similar to Santa Barbara, so, you know, we move and adopt it. And I remember clearly having discussions with staff that when we adopt LAMPs, we should not start getting a cookie cutter and using Santa Barbara, that's the model, and then we just move on. And we need to look at raising the bar and address sometime areas where we had gaps. And there were two areas of gaps that I brought up, and I was promised verbally, not in writing, I was promised verbally that at the next LAMP, absolutely, we're going to review this, because my disappointment with the Monterey is that I said the cake is being baked, and you know, and right now we're just looking at the icing, to use Mayor Delgado's comment. The couple of items that I had brought up, one of them was on parcels that, let's say, have challenges in percolations, to build in the LAMP the opportunity for easement of adjacent parcel to be able to extend a leach line encroaching over another parcel in order to be able to get the proper you know, amount of percolation. So I brought that up as a bit of a solution to help flexibility in some properties. I don't think I recall any objection from staff saying, well, that's, you know, that would have environmental consequences, that effect, I think it added benefits. The other item that I brought up is with Monterey specifically, was that when we use the term parcel, it's very generic, because I would assume that some of these parcels are commercial, or maybe I'm wrong. Is every single parcel residential, or do we have also commercial?
It's my understanding all of them are residential.
Pardon me?
That they're all residential. But, you know, I'm sure that the city can confirm that, but they're all residential that I understand.
So, they're all residential, but when a lamp is adopted, it's basically not written exclusively and specifically for, you know, what I'll call single-family dwellings. So the point that I had brought up was that there should be a subset associated with commercial properties, meaning, you know, there's a big difference of having a single-family dwelling and having a small coffee shop or local gas station with public restrooms and a little store associated with it. And at the time, all staff agreed, yeah, that's a good point. And again, this is not trying to, as regulators make things more complicated, is sizing it accordingly to the use of a facility. So I see us being in another lamp here where it's basically sort of a replay a little bit of some of the concerns that I had expressed. So I just wanted to mention that. What is a little, I guess, a little improvement here, you use the term that when this went to City Council, it was just, to kind of get their overall feel about it. On the last lamp, where myself and some of my colleagues get a little bit uncomfortable with, is that it had been already presented, had been voted, and it would not have been a very good situation for us at the time say, no, we changed it all over, and we basically, after quite a bit of conversation, said, okay, fine, we'll let it go. So anyway, I'd like to hear back from you on these points.
Oh, and if I could add, I think we've raised probably three or four questions now that we might be helpful to have someone from the city, since they're here today, to help add some of those detailed specifics, especially my question, of course, I'm most interested in, but what our chair has raised more broadly from looking across the different LAMP programs that we've seen so far.
So this is Jennifer. Let's start with the one about the City Council approval prior to our approval. So we heard you loud and clear last time, and when we had our discussions with the Tascadero, we expressed to them the concerns and said, you know, we definitely want you to get your council's blessing to bring the item to us for approval, but, you know, make sure that it's worded such that your concerns were addressed. And I think we did that. Did you want us to do something differently? Like, do you want us to not have, because we're going to bring more lamps to you, and so I want to make sure that I hear what you're interested in. Do you want us to, in the future, not have the local entity provide their blessing and tentative approval before coming here?
I'd like to hear from my colleagues, so it doesn't become
I think
personal.
The way this has happened is the way it should happen. Yeah. They're not going to vote a final vote until they hear from us. Because we may add something to it that the council or the county hasn't thought about. So they did a preview. It's like a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Take it to the water board, see what the water board thinks. And then after the water board does its thing, then we'll give final approval or not. I mean, that makes sense to me. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that's good process, yeah. And we appreciate you doing that. I will, you know, just briefly summarize that, yes, I think we were a little uncomfortable with a fully baked cake that came to us from Monterey that we didn't have any input on. And again, that was sort of, the Santa Barbara is the floor, right? I mean, that was the first one. And so that's great that we got that under our belt, but we need to be refining these as we move forward, obviously, in each local jurisdiction. So appreciate Tascadero at some point coming up and talking to us. And I think that's the right process, is having it messaged that, yes, it goes to the local agency for a straw vote, let's say, but that's not the final lamp. Thanks.
And then maybe I'll start with one of your other points. So the comments, when Cecile talked about how this lamp was similar to the other lamps, I don't want you to think that they're cookie cutters, because they're not. Actually, all three of these lamps that you've seen have been quite different. What we mean to imply when we're telling you that they're similar is that they're as protective of water quality and they're functionally equivalent. Tascadero has some specific unique characteristics, and that's the reason why they wanted to do their own lamp. And so if you look at the lamps, they do look quite different. And, you know, each entity is going to have particular situations that we're going to need to address. In Atascadero, because they don't have the commercial facilities that Monterey does, it didn't make sense in the Atascadero lamp to have huge sections about all the commercial areas that are on OTS, because that doesn't exist. So we really do look at these uniquely, but what we're trying to do based on your feedback is make sure that they're functionally equivalent.
Thanks. No, I didn't want to imply that you were just sort of plowing ahead without taking your input. I appreciate that, so thank you.
So, Jennifer, to follow on, in my mind, though, as you make that statement, that because the Tascadero is essentially all residential, it still begs the question, should a commercial parcel be developed, is there language in the LAMP that addresses what those conditions might be, how they might be different, what greater requirements they may have, or design of the system, the size of the system, all those things. Is there a placeholder there, or how does that get addressed?
So the city can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's a specific information that says if a commercial property would be developed, there's going to be different things applied. I mean, in general, the OTS policy is written for the 1.2 million septic systems in California, and those cover commercial and domestic. So the concepts and the design, and really the OTS policy is written for everything. And we made sure that their policy their LAMP is consistent with that policy. And so we feel, even if it was a commercial development, that what they have in their LAMP is going to be protective of water quality.
I guess following Dr. Wolf's comments about the differences in a public facility versus a small family residential system, it seems to me there's differences. So I think it's a fair question, and I think when we hear from Atascadero, as they go back to the city council and they bring up any comments that they want to share that the board raised today in considering how this first lamp may evolve forward, because certainly all of our communities are expanding in their economic growth, and that's a good thing. And that means more commercial development, and some of those may likely be on unsewered parcels. So I think it's something we need to be aware of.
So answering my question about having built a opportunity for easement to improve the ability of a parcel to have a proper linear feet of percolation?
I don't think there's anything specific in the LAMP. And it wasn't something that the city brought up as a need either. We can ask them that question when they come up, if they see that's a constraint for them currently. Mm-hmm. But let's ask the city.
So then before you know, inviting the city, can you refresh my memory, how do we keep track of septic system failure? Do we get feedback?
Annually, each agency report the number of failures and why they failed. And so we will see those reports.
Agencies that have lamps,
right. Well, yeah, and any agency that actually permits it, so yeah.
But is there built in that the contractors who do perform maintenance and repairs have to report those? And because that's an issue right now, for example, with a lamp that's still being worked on with the county San Luis Obispo, is, you know, the ability for county to get the reports of any septic system failure, rather than, well, okay, we'll do a repair, or we do have some concrete crack between the two compartments, we'll just put a piece of fiberglass in between, and on the way we go.
Yeah, and the mechanism for us to obtain that information is that those entities are supposed to pull a permit from the county, and that's how the county collects those records. Mm-hmm. And then through the LAMP process, they're required to summarize them and give them to us.
Once a year?
I think so, yeah, annual report. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Well, I appreciate your indulgence on, you know, answering our questions. So, Matt, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I would like to revisit and hopefully end cap the comments with respect to adaptation to climate change. So in honor of our conversation yesterday, and this is true for all of our programs, we're committed as we implement, or as the counties and the local agencies implement these LAMPs, and we learn from the annual reports over time, we will work with the local agencies and our state and our regional counterparts with respect to how we can modify and improve the LAMPs and the OTS policy to address these issues. And that was kind of part of that whole coordination discussion that Dominic led yesterday with respect to kind of our climate change counterparts and stakeholders. And this is something that we're going to be looking at with all of our programs as we move forward. I would also just like to share that I also have some personal misgivings with respect to the relevance of the rainfall criteria relative to lot size. It doesn't necessarily make sense to me in some regards, and that's something that we'll be looking at moving forward, relative to how areas are developed and the lot size are determined with respect to OTS, implementation throughout our region.
Thank you, Matt. So at this time, I believe that our city manager is here, Ms. Ricard. So if you could maybe come to the podium and then, maybe help us a little bit with some of these questions we had.
Thank you, Chairman and board members. I also have our city engineer, Nick DeBar, here with me. I can answer a lot of the general questions, certainly, but as we get into more detail, I did want to clarify a couple of things that you did ask about. The city of Atascadero does have public water available to all of its lots. Not every parcel takes advantage of that. We do believe that there are 8 parcels within the city that do have that are using a domestic well for that. The remainder of the wells, and there's just a handful of them. I think there's exhibit 2.83, which shows every lot within 100 feet of a well, if any portion of that lot was within 100 feet of a well. So you can see there's a handful of wells. Most of those are landscape or irrigation wells, but there are a few. We did also, I think Jennifer said bedrock. We do have bedrock, but if you wanted to look at the soils map and the geology, those are also exhibits 2.41 and 2.51 to give you a better idea of the scale of things. I think I heard a little bit about concerns during the transition, and that it would take us a 12-month period to go through the ordinance to
make sure that we don't have any inconsistencies in there and that the lamp does prevail during that period. Obviously, the lamp's going to prevail at the end of that period. We're trying to make our ordinances consistent with that. So we did go through this with the city attorney, make sure that we were okay, that the state OTS policy and our lamp were able to be prevailed as we took the time just to make sure there was nothing in the building code or zoning or other places that might conflict. So we're going to want to take some time to do that. I think we talked about a little bit. I think there was a concern about not bringing it to the city council ahead of time and having it fully baked. I understand that. I do want to tell you that developing a lamp is a very long and extensive process, and it's a very public process, right? So while we've been working with Region Water Quality Control Board staff for a year or more, we've been working within the city and holding public meetings and talking with the people that implement and do this on a day-to-day basis for a period of a number of years. The city council does want to see it, does want to give it the thumbs up. They do understand, and we did spend a lot of time at that meeting explaining to them that the Region Water Quality Control Board has the ability to make changes to that lamp and that it wouldn't be final. Obviously, if there's changes made by the board, it goes back to the city council and they have the ability to choose, we want to stick with the lamp or we want to go under just the state OTS policy. Tascadero is very unique, we think, especially since there is domestic water. I think one of the questions they had for me is on sewer expansion. Atascadero has a, to the east side, and where you see the white, that kind of area, that's our commercial corridor. That tends to be a flatter area. There are quite a few hills, but not nearly as much as the west side. The west side's a lot of steep hills and canyons and that type of stuff. And Atascadero is fairly large, 26 square miles. So, you know, we're looking 7 miles from side to side. Expanding sewer to those west side and those very few parcels out there, as you get further west, the larger the parcels are. You know, we have 100-acre parcels, 200-acre parcels. We probably won't be expanding sewer there anytime in the near future. We do have a few sewer expansion areas identified in the OTS, and we are working towards expanding in those areas. Again, getting out to the complete west side will has a lot of logistical hurdles and to get there. So I don't want to promise, that'll all be sewered in 10 years. It's financially extremely not feasible at this time. But where we have commercial areas, where we have our high density, where we have those types of things, we are sewering. We're sewering, you know, following the building code. Hey, if you're within 200 feet, you extend the sewer. Plus, we have the identified sewer expansion areas. I think our OTS does provide for, although we don't believe that there's any commercial properties that aren't on sewer or have the availability of sewer, our OTS policy does provide for, it's based on loading and how much you look at and all of those types of things, but we don't. And looking at it today, we're thinking, I don't think there's anything that's not sewer because our commercial zones are typically hooked up to sewer. I'm going to let our city engineer address some of the questions I missed or cleaned up my city manager speak too with some more details.
So maybe before that, if I understand correctly, your city zoning ordinance then does not allow commercial development on these other areas?
Correct. So if you look at our city zoning area, our commercial areas are up and down El Camino Real, which is right near 101, kind of in a flat area. So up and down here, that's 101 and through here, is most of our commercial. We have some commercial coming out Highway 41 till a certain spot until we get into the end. And we have a little bit of commercial probably out through here, traffic way. So those are our commercial areas. Those are typically where we have the more high density housing. This area here is an area that would be more similar to what most people think of a city on the size of the lots. I think there's a lot of maps and exhibits in yours where you can see the size of the lots. We typically, even our city lots, in those areas, maybe a third of an acre, a half acre, those types of things. And some of those brown areas in that are the sewer extension areas that we've identified. But as you get further out, think more ranching, rural type of lots. This west side is almost, you know, all 2 acre minimums. They show up pretty small on the map, but we're still talking 2 acres. Along El Camino here, that's probably where we have apartments, condos, multifamily, and those types of things. And so those are all in sewer.
Maybe I'll just, Nick DeBar, City Engineer, Public Works Director. Maybe I'll just fill in a few gaps and other questions I heard the board members ask. One thing, E.G. Lewis, our city founder, he was very wise and ahead of his time when he laid out the city. First thing he did was build a public water supply system. So Tascadero Mutual Water has been in existence for over 100 years, and they have records, you know, testing and everything else to support that what we're doing is really effective and does protect water quality. A couple things. One, as you go further out of town, like as the commercial properties, they're along the El Camino 41 and traffic way corridors. All those have sewer availability. As you get further out of town, especially on the west side, the zoning is all residential estates. In fact, they have a formula where minimum lot sizes get larger as you get away from the core of the city. Depth to groundwater, only 10% of the parcels overlay the groundwater basin. And the groundwater basin is, I'll try to use this laser pointer, is basically along the Salinas River here, as Ms. DeMartini mentioned. And all most of those parcels are sewered. And in the report, in the LAMP report, there's 5 areas that we kind of identified as potential areas that we could extend sewer to. And a lot of those areas are covered under that. So we're actually working on a separate process right now to see what we can do with our sanitary sewer collection master plan to incorporate a lot of those areas and get cost estimates and processes to be able to do that. The depth to groundwater was asked. There's 2 lenses that the water company pumped from. The deep wells are 300 to 500 feet deep. And then there's some other ones, smaller ones that are 70 feet. So that kind of feeds deeper aquifers. Rainfall fluctuates very widely in the Tascadero from on the east side along the river that from 10 to 15 inches per year to the west side, 40 plus inches. So really widely, wide fluctuation. Sewer is available in the lower rainfall areas traditionally. And then on the west side, you know, they have the higher rainfall totals. And really the time of concentration or time of travel down to the aquifer is decades, you know, on the west side. So it takes a long time. You know, rainfall, there was a lot of discussion about is rainfall really appropriate or the best precursor to determine, you know, what size of lots. And I would, you know, encourage a board to really look at that in the future as well. Perk test, a lot of those perk tests, they pre-wet anyways, so they have to, like, you know, plateau out as they're doing that. So Even if it's done in the summertime, they have to pre-wet the soil conditions, and so that's all consistent. Let's see, and then failed septic tanks, there was a question on that. In section 6.2 of the LAMP on page 72, there's a inspection maintenance section that talks about that. So any septic systems under this LAMP that get serviced, whether they get pumped out, they get inspected. If there's a deficiency, they report that to the city, the qualified installer or a practitioner. And then we have an enforcement process that we go through where we notify the property owner. If they don't respond or get a fix, you know, we follow up. So there's a lot of this code enforcement piece of the LAMP that is in there. And then the reporting, we have annual reporting that we'll give to the board that indicates how many of these have failed and the cause and everything else. So I hope between both of us we answered the questions, and if there's further ones we can. Oh, so there's a question on easements, if the easements will allow, and the LAMP does allow that, where an easement on a neighboring property, let's say there's a property that doesn't have suitability for, or full suitability for a septic system, it does allow them to get an easement from a neighboring property to site that septic system on there, but it's obviously the neighboring property has to be okay with it too. So that does allow that. So the LAMP provides us, Tascadero's unique, and it provides us some of those flexibility, and that's why we really pursued this, because we care about the water quality and keeping our city, the water supply safe and good order.
And no, I know Mr. Johnson has a question, but I'm glad to hear that, you know, what I have is basically six pages on this item. So I know I didn't get all the details, so appreciate that.
There are exhibits that were attached, and I, in there that have a lot of this. As Cecile mentioned, our LAMP is quite different from Santa Barbara and Monterey County, and I think it's a very good, well thought through LAMP. Our consultant, Monsoon Consultants, I thought did a great job, really dialed in on the parcel level, and we really did a lot of our homework up front because we feel like it's really going to pay dividends when a you know, somebody comes in to develop a parcel, we'll have a lot of the information already at hand and can kind of give some feedback. And obviously that's no, they still need to go through the on-site testing and the engineering type piece to be able to provide us a design system. But at least it provides those property owners or developers that are looking to develop a parcel, you know, some quick feedback, and we have a good idea if it's suitable or what kind of challenges they might have. If it's a steep slope, if they have a shallow soil prism or what it might be.
Thank you. And Mr. Johns?
Yeah, a couple things. We didn't get a copy of the attachment because of the size of the attachment. To save some trees, we got a link so we could look at it online. But just out of curiosity, so what sort of routine inspections are there of OTS? Is it basically on sale of a property that would generate an inspection or, you know, pump out?
It would be, you know, whether Clay's or Ingram Green would get called out to pump out a septic tank. I mean, something as standard as that. They usually do those inspections, and then if they see a deficiency, they'll be required to report to the city.
And then, is there an inspection on sale of on ownership transfer?
There.
It's required as part of the real estate transaction.
Okay, it is required per
okay,
real
so you
estate
get
transaction.
Well.
It's not part of the LAMP because it's already a requirement right
now.
The point of sale.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
I had some questions. Are you still?
Oh, yeah, yes, absolutely.
How many septics are within the blue lined polygon area? How many septics are within the blue lined polygon area?
Zero, right, on the south end of town. Is that?
Well, I'm colorblind, but I think that's a blue lined polygon on the east side of town.
Oh, right here?
Yeah. Well, is that brown or red, that dominant color?
Brownish. Brownish. It's kind of a brown or brownish brown orange.
Brownish. Okay, brownish we'll red, orange.
We'll call it burnt
no wonder
orange.
I'm colorblind. Yeah. So the brownish orange that's within the blue lined polygon, does that denote septic parcels?
Yeah. Yes, this color here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are parcels with existing septic systems.
Okay. How many approximate parcels have septics within that blue line polygon?
So within the entire city or
over
just
the basin.
Over the basin here? Yes.
Yeah, that blue line, right.
Probably about 300 to 500.
300 to 500.
Okay. When they fail, if they fail, whichever ones fail over time in the last 20, 30 years, whatever, how does the city find out about the failure?
Usually the homeowner calls us and starts asking about replacing their system.
Okay.
Or, and under the lamp, it'll be usually they call out a professional to come take a look why it's not working. And then they find out that it's failed, and then they either they come in or they hire somebody to come in. As Mr. Gobler is in the audience, he does a lot of our septic designs. He'll come in and on their behalf.
Okay. And then if and when this lamp is approved, does that change anything as far as when certain septics may fail? Does the same process happen?
It does.
Okay. What's the depth of groundwater in that area within the blue polygon where the majority of that brown-orange septics are?
It's going to really vary quite a bit. Believe it or not, under El Camino Real right downtown, it's about 6 feet you hit groundwater. Now, whether that's a groundwater aquifer, it's really, there's a lot of perched water too that's not necessarily part of the groundwater basin. But it's going to vary quite widely around here.
From 6 feet to 300 feet or? Because I heard it.
300 more.
I'm sorry?
Even more.
Even more.
Yep.
So there was a reference about 10 minutes ago of 70 feet to groundwater. What geographical location was that referring?
So the Tascadero Mutual Water Company, their wells are basically up in this area.
Okay. So there's septics above 6 feet of groundwater, and there's septics that are underlaid by 70-foot groundwater levels in that area.
Typically, the 6 feet along the El Camino here, most of those are sewered, so there's very few septic.
Okay.
In that area.
All right. So then there are some septics that are underlaid by groundwater, which is located 70 feet below the septics.
Correct.
In that area. So I guess my concern is that where I live, 180-foot wells, they're all polluted with different things. The Army put stuff on the surface which percolated into the 180-foot wells, and those are no longer usable where pollutants went into the wells. So to me, there's a connection between what happens on the surface or near the surface and what happens in our 180-foot wells where I live. And so 70 feet doesn't sound like a lot to me given that experience. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
The water supply company, is that a separate services district or is it owned by the city?
That is a separate mutual water company, not controlled by the city.
Okay. Are you familiar with the water quality reports that it issues to the public?
Yes, the consumer confidence reports.
Yeah, how's the water quality?
It's very good.
What are there any constituents that are elevated? They may not cross a threshold limit, but they may be elevated.
Not affiliated with septic.
Okay, just naturally occurring substances. Okay.
Right.
All right.
You know, along the Salinas, there's almost like an underground river that runs through there that is really a dilution. So, again, going back to the founder of Atascadero, he was very wise and brought smart people in at that time to site these wells where they are, because there is such a good water supply, you know, year round. And this is independent from the Paso Robles basin as well. So that was ruled that this is an independent basin due to the Rincon fault line.
Thank you for expanding on the process for bringing consistency between what the LAMP requires and what your current ordinances code show. So I just have one last question on that. So when you complete that 12, and it's understandable that that would take time, although the language in the report suggests that the LAMP, you know, now supersedes everything, but of course that will take time to determine what changes occur. So in your first annual report, will you incorporate descriptive, a reflection of what language changes occur in your codes and ordinances and show how the consistency is being implemented through this language process?
We can easily do that. We can include all the staff reports and the ordinance changes and all that and submit that to staff if they're interested. Yes.
Yeah, and I think because we are new in this process, and I realize, you know, that kind of process is very carefully done and probably very carefully reviewed and with city attorneys looking over the final version of these, the language that implements these ordinances and codes. So I hope it's not an additional burden, but I can tell you the benefit of seeing that in your report would also help to inform other communities coming up behind you to recognize although their ordinances and codes won't be a match to yours, but it may give them a general map, an outline of areas that they could consider and kind of play piggyback, you know, onto the work that you're doing. And I think that is important for all of the LAMP entities to see themselves in this kind of collaborative process of learning from the prior, as each one comes online, learning how to be more efficient possibly, or at least highlighting areas that were more difficult or challenging for the city to address. And so anything that comes out of your reporting along those lines will certainly build on our overall capacity in the region to bring ourselves up to the level that we expect. So this would be great. So thank you.
So one last quick question in my part. Wineries within Atascadero, those would fall under the separate winery permits currently from, you know, from our current winery ordinance. Now, wineries typically have a tasting room. Typically, a tasting room has restrooms. Are those part of the LAMP then, Mr. Robertson, or those fall under the winery ordinance?
Could you repeat that?
Okay, we do have wineries in Atascadero.
Right.
They're, no.
So,
There are no wineries in Atascadero.
Inside the city, there may not be any wineries. They may be on the periphery of the city, right, out east.
Yeah, in the periphery there is, because I just went online to double check it. So, sorry.
Wild.
We do have tasting rooms and other things within the commercial corridor.
Right.
But we have no vineyard winery tasting room like when you think of San Luis Obispo. There might be some south of town with an Atascadero address, but they're within the unincorporated county, not within the city.
And then the ones that you have with a tasting room, those are hooked up to a sewer system?
Yes.
Yeah, and same thing if you have microbreweries, you know, those would fall into that same category. Okay, yes.
I was just gonna ask a question. We've had a bit of a discussion about climate change adaptation. Yesterday, we had an extended discussion about that. From a LAMP perspective, as the implementers of this LAMP, do you have ideas about how climate change might influence you going forward in implementing this LAMP? Both on, like, I'll give you, tease you with this idea, with respect to parcel size, or in other areas, you know, have you given that much thought? I know municipalities are having to deal with climate change adaptation.
I would say that most of our parcels that are on the west side, that are on septic, are quite a bit larger than our minimum lot size based on rainfall and. Mm-hmm. The table that's in the aughts that they suggest that,
right,
you use. Changing our general plan to add more density out there, regardless of what the aughts policy says and Region Water Quality Control Board, if, you know, it's a parcel that says, hey, you can do 1.5 acre minimums based on the rainfall, but we're going to make sure from an engineering standpoint, regardless of what that says, that the septic system works there. So that's why there's the PERC test, the distance from things, a lot of those other things to make sure that it does. So as the rainfall changes, I don't see us changing our zoning, because our zoning already exceeds that rainfall total. And I don't see us, as the rainfall changes, they still have to meet all of those other formulas. What is it, the Ryon formula, if I'm using this correctly, to put a septic there. I also want to say Atascadero has some vacant parcels, but it's mainly built out. There are a few dotted here and there. They're not, you know, giant places that are going to be subdivided into the future. We had a lot of discussion with staff on that over the year of conversations on, okay, what right now, you know, is a 100-acre parcel but can be divided up into 20-acre parcels. Okay, there may be, that 100 acres may now be 5 lots instead of 1 in the future based on the zoning. So there's not a lot of that. I think our zoning, for the most part, exceeds. There's a lot of really old 100-year-old odd lots here, and they're not a lot. How many were there? Handful? 20? 20 lots that, you know, might be an acre and a half, that when their septic system fails, it'll be an issue. But other than that, I don't see that having a huge effect on us one way or the other.
All right. So, you know, you had some of your colleagues here too, and your consultant. Any of you wanted to also supplement this before I asked my colleague if we can consider the next step? No, it's fine.
Good morning. My name's Eric Gobler. I'm a civil engineer, and I've lived and done consulting in Atascadero since 1980. Is this on?
Okay. Yes, you're on.
During that time, I've probably been involved in the design and construction oversight of, well, several, I'll just say several hundred septic systems. I just want to assure you that the city of Atascadero is very consistent and very strict on how they review and approve septic systems. Over the years, they have a consistent and clear policy on septic system design. And even though there is no degradation of groundwater as identified by the Mutual Water Company related to septic systems, based on the existing standards that the city has imposed, the LAMP is another step in the direction of being more conservative in the design. So by approving the LAMP in the form that it's in, actually provides additional assurance to the residents and the public that water quality will be adequately protected, even to a greater degree than it has been in the past. But it has been a privilege of mine to work with the city. They're very consistent. We don't always agree on how the standards should be implemented, but they are very consistent in ensuring that septic systems are designed and installed according to the standards that they have had in the past. So I'm sure that moving forward in the future that will be the same. So
all right.
That's just my comments on that. Okay. I have worked with the city over the last several years in development of the LAMP, and they really do know what's going on with respect to the city and are very protective of the resources that are within the city limits. So thank you.
All right, thank you. And also want to close public comments. Do we have any speaker card as public comment on this item? I see none. Please go ahead.
I did. I just wanted to thank staff. Cecile and Jennifer met with us quite a bit to kind of come up with, okay, we all have a very big concern about water quality, public health and safety, all of those mutual concerns. And one of our concerns is making sure that we inadvertently didn't over-regulate or prescribe any fix as we start to see anything occur. What we really want to do is be on top of it long before it hits any thresholds, fix things, have as many tools in our toolbox to fix it the right way so that we're really addressing the issue. And they understood our concerns and helped us through that process. We also have, obviously, a lot of other competing concerns. Our oak forest is a huge concern in Atascadero. They seem to understand and allow us, we talk through to make sure that we're protecting water quality, we're protecting all of public health and safety, but still allowing us to have some tools that would also protect our oak forest. So we appreciate that. I want to thank you guys for working with us and meeting with us. And thank the board. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So at this time, what is in our hand is the potential adoption of resolution R3-2018-0007.
And I'd like to make a motion that we adopt that resolution.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? I see none. So roll call, please.
I'm sorry, who gets the second?
She does. I'll take it today. You took it yesterday.
Thank you.
And just a brief comment, if I could, thank you to the city manager, the engineer, the consultant, and the staff for working as a good team to move through this process.
Dr. Wolf?
Approved.
Dr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Delgado?
Yes.
Ms. Gray?
Aye.
Ms. Harlan?
Yes.
Mr. Johnston?
Aye.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
Thank you.
And, you know, to supplement a little bit, you know, Mr. Delgado, you know, when we ask a lot of these questions, you say, my goodness, they have all these questions for us. And that includes, you know, the stakeholders and staff. But, you know, all of you have worked on this for a year and a half. In our case, it's this week, basically.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, putting it in perspective is you know, familiarizing ourselves, not having all of the background information. So it's not because, you know, we're a pretty obtuse group here, but you know, we have to familiarize ourselves, and we also have the requirement of providing, you know, performing good due diligence and in the vetting process. One, you know, maybe something that could help in the future and understand the conundrum of trying to save a tree, but it is sometimes a little difficult. Say, okay, it's all available electronically. When I meet here, I don't like to use a laptop because I like to make contact with all of you and not, you know, being behind my screen. But it makes it difficult then, you know, when I have just six pages to have the information. So perhaps there could be a middle of a road of being able to get some of the key points like maps and things like that in the document, and, you know, not getting the whatever 100 pages there were, but, you know, a little more. So that's something internally maybe as, you know, with your help, John, we could work on.
We were on the same wavelength there. I literally have a post-it to that effect on my notes that we didn't put enough information in your packets for you to dive into this a little deeper and give you the content, I think.
Right.
Can I make a comment?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We had
problems in Santa Cruz County many years ago with leachate flowing over to the neighbor's yard on steep slopes. So I believe they passed an ordinance. I'm not sure if they revised it since then, but they do not allow septics on parcels that have a greater than 30% slope. So if you have any of those kind of slopes in your community, I would encourage you to have them all look at it. And they're smaller. I would encourage you to encourage them to join the sewer system.
All right, so that concludes this item. So again, Atascadero, thank you for helping us getting a good understanding of what we were voting on. So thanks, and also staff, thank you for helping us getting all those clarifications. So without further ado, please introduce the next item, Mr. Robertson.
Do you want to take a break first?
You know, how can I say no?
So you don't, yeah, in no, a bad way.
So
you we're taking a break.
15 minutes, we reconvene at 11:15. Thank you. Yeah.